Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter at RealBirdLawyer. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor_Witt on Twitter.com or the Twitter app in your app store. What's going on, buddy?
Enjoyed playing a little board games with you earlier and enjoying that you are in town for a little bit longer, and we got to do some IRL bro hangout time.
Yeah, I mean, good on you for beating me in the search for Planet X. You know, that was a fun game. It was a good win on your part. I did defeat you in Star Wars Outer Rim earlier this week. So, you know, we're 1-1. We're going to have to have a rubber match sometime this weekend when we can find time amongst all the basketball that's coming up. Sounds great. Brought to you, as always, by the Pigskin Podcast Network at PigskinPodNet. Check out our partners DraftKings and Underdog Fantasy. Pretty simple show for you guys this week. We've got news, in which we discuss the comings and goings of the Chiefs free agent class. More goings than comings so far. Hey-o! We've got some news to discuss there. We're going to talk about what is happening around the league because, I mean, there's a lot going on. It's free agency, as I may have mentioned. And then we're going to talk about where we go from here. Still a lot of quality players. We are recording this on Wednesday, March 15th.
Who knows what's going to change by the time you listen to this podcast.
Who knows? Maybe Aaron Rodgers will finally be a New York Jet. Probably not though. So let's get into it. Starting off just with a minor transaction that could mean a lot. The Chiefs have converted $12 million of Patrick Mahomes' 2023 roster bonus into a signing bonus that did clear for the Chiefs almost $10 million in new salary cap space. This happened about an hour before we recorded, and I got to ask you, is this something imminent, or is it just a thing?
I kind of wish that when they cleared it, they didn't have basically zero cap space, sure. And I would think that that would be a little bit more enticing. The fact that they were right up against the cap after a couple of the moves this week, and then they did this to kind of give themselves some breathing room, doesn't quite fire me up, especially combined with what we'll talk about with some of the offers that they didn't match with some of their players going to other teams. I feel like the Chiefs are they're kind of acting like pores right now, and I want that to turn around in a hurry.
We have a bit of breaking news before we get into it. Orlando Brown Jr. has a contract
with it
with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Ho, ho, ho!
4 years, $64 million, which is that's less money than the Chiefs gave Juwan Taylor. And he gets $31 million signing bonus. No guarantees yet. This broke 4 minutes ago. So Mike Garofalo said he was adamant he wanted to stay at left tackle and the Bengals would allow him to do that. He is the one that's the team that would let him play left tackle. That is a fascinating bit of breaking news that we get to evaluate and discuss live here on the podcast. Literally, as you were kind of just playing us in, I was like, yeah. I better check Twitter to see if anything important has happened in the 5 minutes between when we hit record and when we got to this point. And I was like, whoa. Okay. All right.
What I was trying to say is you and your ADD when we're on the pod, and I know you've got one eye on Twitter at all times. That's great in this case. That's super helpful because I certainly was not looking around. And now Orlando Brown Jr. gets a job with the Chiefs, arguably number one to maybe number one A competition in the AFC.
I'd say for sure our biggest rival. I mean, whether or not.
Yeah. Hatred wise.
Sure. Right. I mean, It's a grudge match, and Orlando knows that because he played in all four of the games that the Chiefs played against Joe Burrow and the Bengals the last 2 years, including the AFC Championship game loss last year, including the two regular season losses, and then, of course, the AFC Championship game win this year, and now he's just switching sides. I feel a little bit betrayed. I'm just going to let my emotions loose here, and, it's fine.
I feel a different emotion than betrayal. I feel justified in my kind of hate or talking shit on Orlando. So, like,
sure.
I haven't really been that into him. Like, I know that he does seem like a good dude, and that's fine, and that's great, and I'm sure 99.9% of all NFL players are good dudes. That's not really what it's about. But I feel like since the day that the Chiefs traded for him, and really since before that when he was kind of towards the end of his Baltimore tenure, and then with his time in the Chiefs. I just think that he smells his own farts too much. I think that he thinks that he is better than he is, and it cost him in contract negotiations, and it cost him a solidified role on this team, because he certainly could have approached the Chiefs from a position of like understanding his own actual value. And I think he would still be a member of the defending Super Bowl champs. And instead, now he gets to go lose to the Chiefs. So good luck, Orlando.
Well, let's not forget that he turned down last year, allegedly, purportedly, a 6-year, $139 million deal with the Chiefs. And
yeah, good
this
point.
Includes a $31 million signing bonus, which would be guaranteed. I don't know how much of the rest of this deal would be guaranteed. It's interesting. Tom Pelissero's tweet, now that I'm reading it again, he does say it's $64 million over 4 years, but front-loaded with the Bengals. That includes a $31 million signing bonus, which signing bonus is the largest ever for an offensive lineman. It sounds like this may actually end up being maybe like a shorter deal.
Yeah.
With the signing bonus sort of front loaded. And of course with the Bengals, they have to pay Joe Burrow. So that kind of makes sense if they wanted to keep him around, but it's a really fascinating dynamic, because we were going to lead this off with the Chiefs big shiny addition on Monday, afternoon, an hour or two into free agency. They signed Jacksonville Jaguars right tackle Juwan Taylor. And yeah. I say right tackle, but of course, they paid him $60 million guaranteed, which is almost as much as Orlando's total deal over 4 years, the same amount of years that Orlando got. And they're going to move him to left tackle, which is where Orlando is going to play. And he moved, of course, from right tackle, starting off with the Ravens, to left tackle when their left tackle got hurt. And then Ronnie Stanley got hurt. And then And then he got traded to the Chiefs and played left tackle for the Chiefs for two seasons. So, boy, this is a really fascinating dynamic that we get to react to in real time.
It is. And before we move on, I just want to note for you that in our show notes on our Still Free Agents board, I had Orlando Brown Jr. listed as a right tackle just to kind of talk shit, just to be funny. And, I just feel like if this is the route he wants to go, and maybe, money talks in this league, and at the end of the day, maybe he didn't say like, oh, I'm going to leave the Chiefs and I'm going to go to the team that has got, the second best quarterback, blah, 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 all that. Maybe he didn't really consider all that. Maybe he just said, hey, Bengals are offering me the most money to go play guaranteed left tackle, and that's what I'm going to do. But it's interesting because it's a little bit of it kind of reminds me of pro wrestling. And maybe this is because I've been watching some pro wrestling documentaries recently, but like it's kind of like the off-field rivalry drama stuff that kind of fuels our fire, that gets everybody talking. And I mean, this is going to be when the Chiefs play the Bengals next year, like everyone's going to be talking more about Orlando and him playing against the Chiefs defensive line and seeing, Karlaftis and those guys going after him. And I mean, I think it's a lot of fun. I'm really fired up that a guy that I wasn't super fired up to root for is going.
Yeah, now you get the bad guys. Now you get a root against him. Now, the only thing that I kind of regret about this is that unfortunately the Chiefs don't really have anybody on the roster right now that would put Orlando in a blender. I mean, he really struggles with speed, and the Chiefs are not really a speed rushing team. They're really more of a power rushing team. Not a lot of bend necessarily in the Chiefs' current edge rushing class, and that's what Orlando seems to really struggle with. But
a lot of offseason between now and
there's a lot of offseason left. We'll talk about some of the potential moves we can make after the break here in the middle. But man, it's also quite a contrast for Orlando going from protecting Patrick Mahomes to protecting Joe Burrow. Very different quarterbacks in the pocket. Their maneuverability and their ability to get away from pressure. Burrow obviously cut his sack numbers way down this past year, but he's always been, the first 2 years was obviously a high sack quarterback. A lot of that is, how you're choosing to play the game, but it's going to be very different, and it's going to add a lot of juice to this rivalry. Can't wait for that. So let's talk briefly here about Juwan Taylor. We obviously mentioned the Chiefs are giving him $80 million, $60 million guaranteed over four seasons. He's coming from the Jaguars, and he is a player that has played right tackle exclusively in so far in his pro career, he has a little bit of left tackle experience. I think he played a couple of games there in college.
Yeah, not much. Cup of coffee.
Grades out as a plus-plus pass protector, and he's really more average, below average in the run game. 25 years old, so the Chiefs have a type in free agency. We didn't do a preview this year, but if we had, we would have said, look, the Chiefs are going to pay people in free agency. It's either one-year deals for older guys, or if they're going to give out a multi-year contract and they're going to shell out the money, it's going to be for a guy that's in his mid-20s. I mean, they love to spend on youth. And we have endorsed this theory every year that we go into free agency on this podcast. If you're going to spend money in free agency, I mean, a lot of money in free agency, you might as well bet on a guy that could get better and still has room to improve. And the Chiefs certainly are doing that with Juwan Taylor.
Yeah, not only could get better, but is, even if he doesn't get better, already serviceable, right? Like it's the high enough floor that they're comfortable playing him immediately, but the high enough ceiling where, yeah, if you give a young guy some time with good coaching and, you know, some time to develop and get, I mean, it really does it's a good profile of a player to have. Like I know it's simple to say like, oh yeah, you want to go out and get young guys that are really good. Like, duh. But they stick to their guns. They stick to that mentality, and they're consistent in that being the type of player that if they're going to put assets into, it's going to be that type of player. And yeah, it doesn't work every time. No strategy in the NFL is going to work every time. But the homers that you hit on this strategy are massive franchise-altering homers. If you get a guy in his mid-20s that you project to be a superstar and he becomes a superstar, like, you're going to win a shitload of football games. That's how it works. And this is the type of guy that, I mean, I just feel like if they, first of all, if they weren't comfortable with him switching over to left tackle, they would not have made, given him the money, made the move. I mean, this is, the scouts are good on the Chiefs. They understand talent. They understand the types of. And this
obviously was the plan from well before.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Obviously. This happened within an hour of the tampering period opening, and
they had their sights on him.
They leaked to James Palmer right away that he was going to play left tackle. I mean, the news was out there. Like, this was always the plan.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I'm sure negotiating with Orlando as long as they have all offseason last year, clearly that, you know, he's been around the team for a long time, that I'm sure if the Chiefs could have gotten something done with Orlando that made sense for the Chiefs, they wouldn't have gone in this direction. But given his, you know, his own proclivity to want to get paid really high to play left tackle, I mean, I think they pivoted pretty early in this process is what it seems like. And they identified their guy. They went out. They got him. I mean, just very, very championship-like maneuver by the Chiefs to immediately replace the guy that is holding them hostage with the salary negotiations and just saying, nah, we'll pay this other guy. Go on. Have fun, Orlando. Do your thing.
It sounds like, just to wrap up our conversation with Orlando, Ian Rappaport just tweeted he gets 67.87 of the $64 million fully guaranteed. So he is getting about
good for him.
Yeah, he is getting about 40 something million dollars fully guaranteed there. He is going to get 49.9 million through year three. And he said by that point he'll be ready for the next deal. So it does sound like it's essentially a 3-year $50 million deal. Which again, I mean, that still is a lower APY than what the Chiefs are playing for Juwan Taylor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's gonna be really fascinating, obviously, to see how those two deals play out. And these are the two premier teams in the AFC. They are two teams that just paid, you know, young left tackles. Juwan Taylor is 2 years younger than Orlando Brown. You know, he certainly at right tackle has graded out as a much better pass blocker. And, you know, both these
third teams, lowest pressure rate among all tackles last season.
I mean,
for Juwan Taylor,
it's great.
That's pretty good.
That's really good. Let's talk about the other new addition for the Chiefs. It's defensive end Charles Omenihue coming over from the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, this is a guy who, this was sort of a Brett Veach special because we swooped in late on the second day of free agency. I mean, it was probably around 10:30, 11 o'clock local time. I was about to go to bed when you sent me the text and said, hey, we got a new chief on the team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a guy that was kind of a little bit off my radar, but it, you know, the more I read about him, the more I like. Again, this is a guy who is, he's going to be 26, I believe, in August. So this is another guy who has youth on his side. He was probably, in terms of production, probably the second best pass rusher for arguably the best pass rush in the NFL last year. I mean, you certainly would put the 49ers and probably the Cowboys, you know, top two.
Eagles. But I mean, Eagles,
sure, of course.
But yes, I mean, the Niners had a ferocious defense on every level, and he was a rotational guy for them, but that's not because of his skill. That's just because of their ridiculous depth they have on the defensive line. But yeah, he pops off the page. 6'5", 280. He has a 97th percentile in wingspan and a 98th percentile in arm length. And we, of course, know that Spags loves the dudes with the big, long arms. And I mean, the pass rush win rates from him, and edge rushers in the NFL last year who had higher win percentages than O'Manihue, there were only five of them, and they're the superstars. Myles Garrett, Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons, Za'Darius Smith, and Trey Hendrickson were the only five guys in the NFL with a higher win rate than him. So, yeah, he didn't play a ton of snaps.
And he wasn't playing across from Nick Bosa.
Who's second on that list. Sure, yes, exactly right. So, you know, I mean, I get that. Good pass rushes, you know, they're like a feedback loop with each other. But boy, he's a guy that he was the Big 12 defensive line player of the year in 2018 when he was with Texas. So he certainly had the accolades in college and, you know, I mean, the pedigree to go out in the NFL and dominate. And I'm fired up for this move as much as I'm fired up for Juwan Taylor and to get a good guy back there protecting Pat. I think O'Manihue might be the bigger impact year one. Of these two, he should be a really nice piece.
I don't know if I said it, but it's essentially 2 years, $16 million, I believe it's, or excuse me, I think it's about $6 million per year that's guaranteed, and then he has the possibility with incentives of getting up to $20 million total over two
seasons, right.
Which is not an extraordinary amount of money. I mean, it's a good deal for the Chiefs because, again, when you're banking on a guy that has that kind of productivity, I get that this was his best season and the contract year is undefeated, you know, unless you're Orlando Brown Jr., I guess.
Ooh.
Ooh, taking the first L.
Got him.
Listen, I mean, you're betting on a guy who's going to be 26 years old at the start of the season. You're getting his age 26 and his age 27 seasons. That's right in a pass rusher's prime. Certainly, he developed really nicely with the 49ers. And then, you know, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a cog on this defense, and he's not going to have Nick Bosa across from him, but that gives him an opportunity to step up and show that he's more than a rotational piece.
Yeah. And he'll have Chris Jones in the middle, which certainly helps with the defensive line getting pressure and taking off double teams from him and all that stuff. I mean, he'll still get plenty of help on this Chiefs defensive line. And, you know, it's when you get guys that are going in and out of the roster, you want to make sure that the guys that are coming in can step in right away and that you don't have to kind of lead them along and wait for them to really get their feet wet in six or seven or eight games or whatever. And O'Manihue certainly seems like the type of guy with the big enough upside that should be able to step in day one and cause some havoc for the Chiefs defensive line. I think I'm really fired up about this one.
Yeah. Let's get to the departures. And we already talked about Orlando. We got to break that news on the podcast. You know,
yeah, that was fun.
So hopefully some of you still will not have heard when you get the podcast.
Doubt it.
Don't get it turned around quite that fast. But let's talk about the big departure. Several players departing in free agency. We're not going to go in chronological order. We've kind of got these arranged in order of, you know, potential impact of the Chiefs. So starting off, wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster signs a 3-year, $33 million deal with the New England Patriots today. $16 million of that is guaranteed. So this was not a major deal. And I should say, this was essentially the deal that Jacoby Myers got with the Las Vegas Raiders. And he signed yesterday, obviously a former Patriot. And as soon as Juju signed for essentially the same deal, he let it be known on Twitter that this was a cold business.
Yeah.
And he's right, because they essentially said, we would rather have this player from the Chiefs, from outside our organization, for the same amount of money as you, even though Juju's older and hasn't been quite as healthy as Jacoby Myers. Up.
Yep.
You know, it's just a really interesting deal. We have heard that the Chiefs did make Juju an offer, that they, you know, had an offer on the table for him. But Sam McDowell tweets that the Patriots offer was significantly more favorable to Juju financially, which is interesting because it still is not an outrageous amount of money for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Chiefs must have kind of felt like Juju was a piece that if he wanted to come back and if it was very important for him to remain a Chief, they were going to allow him to remain a Chief. They were going to give him an offer that, you know, doesn't hurt the team, but lets him come back and you know, as is his right, and nobody blames him for, he went and got his bag, and he got money in New England that he wouldn't have gotten with the Chiefs. And from all accounts, sounds like a significant bump there. Not just that the Patriots beat him by $500,000 or something, but that they gave him a significant raise. And, you know, he's a guy that we were pretty much, I was assuming he was coming back. I felt like the pursuit of him the year before the Chiefs got him, given the success that he had on the field last year with the Super Bowl and with the way that everyone kind of talked about the fit and all that stuff, I just had kind of gone into this offseason saying, well, yeah, Juju signed the 1 year deal, but they'll bring him back and they'll give him, you know, $28, $30 million or something and make it work. But
well, and James Palmer said, I mean, reported a week ago that, you know, the Chiefs' plan was to bring him back. And yeah, that was the plan, was to essentially run back the receiving core and bring Juju back. And so it's interesting that that would have made it to, you know, a national reporter like James Palmer. And then for this to be the outcome today where the Chiefs decided not to retain him. They certainly could have made this offer work for them, and they made the decision not to do it.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So we'll see how it works out. You know, going from Patrick Mahomes to Mac Jones is certainly going to be a bit of a change for Juju. But, I mean, he came from Wash Big Ben, so he'll just have to remember what it was like 2 years ago when his quarterback couldn't get him the ball. And I'm sure he'll adjust just fine in New England. But, yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully he can go beat the Bills and the Rodgers led Jets and kind of, I mean, I'm in on the Patriots. They're the worst team in the AFC East. Like, if they go win some games, that's better for the Chiefs.
Sure. We're rooting for the Patriots. We're Patriots fans now, because
just like we predicted,
clearly the worst team in that division. And we just gotta, you know, we gotta root for the Patriots. We gotta root for the underdogs. Go Pats. Let's talk about the next guy on the list. Safety Juan Thornhill signs with the Cleveland Browns today. A 3-year deal worth $27 million. We haven't seen a lot of safeties on the move in this class, and this was not one that had, you know, necessarily a star player at the top like Tyrann Mathieu a few years ago when the Chiefs signed him. He obviously was, you know, in his prime and was going to command a lot of money. You didn't see really any star safeties in this class. And, you know, this is, we talked to our guy Dan Harms, you know, a couple of weeks ago about the combine. This just is not a, this is not a stellar safety class. The safeties are undersized. They're slow. Juan gets a decent payday, 3 years, $21 million to sign with the Browns. What do you think?
I think I'm going to miss him. I think he seemed like a good dude. He was really entertaining. He was good on the field. I almost never felt like damn, Thornhill, like he totally blew that. Like he was solid fundamentally. And he's a piece that when the Chiefs drafted him, that was kind of the start of like, okay, the Chiefs are actually kind of figuring out this whole NFL draft scenario.
Sure. He was like he was Brett Veach's first good draft pick.
Exactly. And that kind of, you know, that's obviously too bad. That's something that I would have loved to have seen Thornhill stick around a little bit longer. But again, you know, Cleveland wants to pay him some money. And I mean, $21 million is a lot of money. Who am I to say he should have stuck around here for less money than that? The business part of this is tough to swallow sometimes, because we get all these guys become, you know, like almost like family members to us, where we're rooting for them every single Sunday and all the time. And it just kind of, it bites when they've got to go play for any other team, but specifically an AFC team, an AFC rival, any of that stuff. I mean, the Browns, yeah, they're not really quite on our radar right now, but I mean, if Deshaun Watson figures it out and the Browns are like a playoff team and Juan Thornhill's their starting safety, like that's going to piss me off a little bit. So yeah, it's too bad.
You know who did it right, Taylor?
Who did?
Andrew Wiley.
Yes,
that guy went out and got the bag first thing on Monday. He signed with an NFC team, and not just any NFC team. He signed with our boy Eric Bieniemy and the Washington Commanders. So the Chiefs obviously are going to have a new right tackle. As soon as, the Juwan Taylor deal was announced shortly after Wiley. So Wiley actually got his bag very early. He obviously, this is something that's been in the works for a couple weeks now. I'm sure he was talking, he was talking to EB, and I'm sure this was the plan for quite some time. And, you know, that was one of the first deals announced on Monday that he was going to be leaving to join the Commanders. But the Chiefs are not replacing him with Juwan Taylor. They still have a hole at right tackle. And I mean, it's a bummer to see him go because Andrew Wiley's obviously a player who, you know, kind of like, he's sort of like Frank Clark almost, not in terms of the personality, but in terms of the arc. I mean, he was a guy who, you know, started off strong, had some really low moments with the Chiefs, and then turned into a really good player this year and helped the Chiefs win their second Super Bowl in four seasons. Sad to see him go.
Yeah, and the more we watch of this team, certainly a team that wins the Super Bowl where you try and drink in as much off-the-field content as you can, like the more I saw of Andrew Wiley not playing football, the more I liked him. I mean, you know, like just seems like a really, really likable, funny. They did the whole thing about him collecting Pokemon and stuff. Like he's just got a really jolly personality. And like you said, had so many struggles that once they slotted him into right tackle for good this year. And I mean, he was damn good. And he played his ass off in the Super Bowl, had an absolute dominant showing against that Philly defensive line. And you know, again, really, really bummed to see my guy go because I liked Wiley a lot, but Washington was paying him more money than the Chiefs were willing to. And that's kind of how this goes. You win the Super Bowl, you get a lot of, you know, good, positive love from everyone else in the league. They bring you in and they look at that shiny ring on your finger, or in some of these guys' cases, two rings on their fingers, and they say, I will give you however much money you want to come play football with us. And I mean, like you said, the relationship with EB, huge there for Wiley, being familiar with what they're doing on offense and with, I'm sure, some of the checks and calls and stuff. Because the other thing is Washington is likely going to have Sam Howell or someone else at quarterback that, I mean, they're not going to go in with a vet quarterback that's going to want to run things his way, which right. means EB's definitely going to do stuff his way in Washington. And Wiley knows he's going to step into that and probably be able to run the whole playbook day one. So, yeah, I think that's a great fit for Wiley. It's a great fit for Washington, and hope to see our Commanders go out and do fun things.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I feel about rooting for a team owned by Dan Snyder, but
I don't think they're going to be owned by him for long.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully the NFL can finally find a way to push him out, because I would love to be able to root for Eric Bieniemy and Andrew Wiley. Love those guys. Another guy that we love and hate to see go, Colin Saunders, former defensive tackle, now heading to the Saints to rejoin Tyrann Mathieu, who is happy to see him come in. He gets a 3-year deal worth up to $14.5 million. He obviously is a guy who, you know, couldn't really get on the field. He was a draft pick a couple years ago for the Chiefs and had a hard time finding his way. Obviously struggled with some injuries. And then, you know, Turk Wharton goes down for the Chiefs earlier this year. And, you know, Colin Saunders gets his first chance to get significant playing time. He ends up recording a sack in the Super Bowl. He ends up with Tom Pelissero tweeted, seems like just yesterday he was covering Colin Saunders' baby labor drama at the Senior Bowl. His wife was going to labor. 4 years later, he has three kids, just got paid, 3-year deal worth up to $14.5 million. And, you know, Colin is a guy that certainly has been very vocal about his journey and his struggles. And it's great to see him go out a champion and go get paid. But it's kind of a bit of a bummer that he's not going to be returning.
Yeah, you know, you get a guy that big that could move as fast as he can, does the backflips. He's a very unique guy, and was kind of one of those stories where early on, he really wasn't getting a lot of playing time. Like you said, until Turk went down, he was, I think, a rotational piece would be a bit of, you know, sure, doing him a little generous. Bit of service. Yeah, be generous. And now that he got his chance, if Turk doesn't go down there, I mean, who knows what Colin's career looks like. And instead he gets to go and get some money from the Saints and kind of pay off that journey that he's been going on. That contract you get after your rookie deal, I'm sure there's just absolutely nothing like it, getting, you know, tens of millions of dollars to go play football. And I'm happy for him. That's an NFC team. I know it's helmed by Derek Carr, but the Saints are obviously not on my radar at all.
Yeah, we're
Saints fans.
We're
now.
Pro Derek Carr. Yeah, we're pro Derek Carr now. So it's
exactly it's right.
Completely fine. To your point, I mean, to both of our points, I guess. But he played 300 snaps his rookie year, but then his second season, he obviously got injured, played only 74 snaps, and then last year only 144 snaps. And then this past year, the Super Bowl season, he ended up playing 421 snaps in the regular season. He obviously was a big contributor in the playoffs. So it was great to see him get an opportunity to prove that he belongs in this league and, you know, get an opportunity to secure that bag. Good for Colin. Couple more departures. Fullback Michael Burton actually signed with the Denver Broncos.
Boo.
And linebacker Darius Harris was non-tendered. He actually passed through whatever the offseason version of waivers is. I'm sure somebody's listening to the show and they're like, it's not waivers, you idiot. I know that it's not. I just didn't do
functions like
enough waivers. Preparation for Darius Harris. He's non-tendered. He's currently an unrestricted free agent. He can sign with any team, including with the Chiefs. Not a whole lot to talk about there. We do have three players that are returning to the Chiefs that we should briefly discuss. Tight end Jody Fortson returns, quarterback Shane Buechele, and defensive tackle Tershawn Wharton is coming back. Your thoughts on these players returning?
I'll be interested in how much Jody Fortson gets to play. He kind of dropped off towards the end of this year. Not really. I mean, I don't know if health had something to do with it or effectiveness or whatever, but he kind of seemed like he fell out of favor offensive snap wise. And then I'll be interested if the Chiefs bring in a veteran quarterback as the QB2, or if they just figure, hey, if Pat goes down, like, we probably just don't even need to bother. We might as well get a higher draft slot and just have Shane Buechele out there anyway. So, and then Turk Wharton, you know, before he got hurt, he was playing. He was a good piece. And
yeah, he was.
And I think the Chiefs recognized that, which is why they brought him back. And with the departure of Colin Saunders, you know, would love to see Turk Wharton go in and have a big year next year.
Sure, Turk gets his job back, which is always good to see. We have several players who are still free agents as of the time of us recording this. It's about 9 o'clock, or excuse me, about 10 o'clock Kansas City time. Left tackle Prince Egbuonogo, guard Nick Allegretti, running backs Jerick McKinnon and Ronald Jones, wide receivers Mecole Hardman and Justin Watson, tight end Blake Bell, defensive ends Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap, defensive tackle Derek Nnadi, and safety Deion Bush. Of those guys, and we are going to talk about what moves we'd like to see make, but who do you think is, if you just had to give me one name from that list, who do you think is most likely to return to the Chiefs?
Man, I would have said Frank until he kind of started tweeting through it tonight and talking about numbers don't lie, and if you're leading 70 men, how can you not be honest with yourself? And just kind of some stuff that made it sound like maybe he's learned that the team is not going to bring him back. Maybe. I don't know. But if not, I would have loved Frank. I think he still would have been a good fit to come back for all the reasons that we talked about. But I'm going to say Jerick McKinnon here. I think that he was a really good fit for what the Chiefs wanted out of a back. Love his pass protecting ability, especially with, you know, having a left tackle that hasn't played left tackle and no right tackle right now. I think the Chiefs would value a running back that they would feel comfortable going out there and chipping like hell and being a pass pro block or back. And McKinnon fits that mold. I know he's getting a little bit older, but I think he's probably the guy that, and especially if I'm looking at these and like, who do I want back the most? Like, I think it is McKinnon maybe.
Yeah, I don't mind that pick. I'm going to call my shot here. I'm going to talk about Frank Clark in our next little segment. So I'll save my opinion on him, but I'm kind of thinking that we might see a reunion with Mecole Hardman. I'd be really interested to see what his market looks like. But, you know, Juju and Jacoby Myers were pretty inarguably the two best receivers on the market, unless, you know, it depends on how you feel about Odell and whether you're going to loop in, you know, somebody like DeAndre Hopkins, who's technically a trade candidate and not a free agent. But, you know, with Juju Smith-Schuster gone, not that they're comparable players. I understand that they fit different roles on the team, but, you know, the Chiefs have to get a wide receiver somewhere. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happening. Speaking of happening, let's talk about what is happening. I don't want to spend any time on this, but Aaron Rodgers is eventually going to be a New York Jet. The Chiefs are going to play the Jets this year. I guess we can talk about it more if and when it happens, but I'm over it.
Yeah, I was over it a long time ago. I have completely done a 180 on Rodgers and my opinion of him. I hope that he loses every game from
Favre 2.0.
He sucks. He sucks. And well, Favre ended up sucking for a lot more, I think, like, objective reasons, like, you know, dick pics and defrauding Medicare. A lot of things that are actual horrible things. Rodgers just sucks. He just is not – he's just annoying, and I don't like his whole attitude, and I'm not in. So, if he's on the Jets, then when the Jets play the Bengals and the Dolphins and all that stuff, it'll be whoever – sorry, I meant to say the Bills, but I said the Bengals because they're all the same. They're all just the AFC contenders that aren't as good as the Chiefs, and when they all play each other, then whoever loses is good for us.
There are essentially two tiers in the AFC, the Chiefs and not the Chiefs. And we are in the Chiefs tier and everybody else is in the non-Chiefs tier. And it's good to be in our tier. That's the tier that wins the Super Bowl 50% of the time versus the field. So, it is what it is. I'm sure you stuck this in there because this affects your dynasty team roster. But Austin Eckler, running back for the Chargers, requests a trade. He's in a really interesting situation because he is, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe 28 years old, and he's a smaller guy. Obviously not. He's currently 27. He's going to turn 28 in May. Yep. So he'll play next season at 28. He's 5'8", 200 pounds, and he has a lot of tread on the tires. But for a running back, a guy that has mattered as much as a running back can the last couple of years of the Chargers as their lead back. He obviously has. I think he led the league in touchdowns last year and came pretty close, but for Jamal Williams this year.
He's led him combined over the last 2 years and I think maybe the last 3 years too. Like, he's been a touchdown machine.
Yeah.
Which I have benefited from greatly in my fantasy leagues. But to my credit, I put this in here because it's a significant AFC West situation. This is really, really big deal for the Chargers because as much as, Herbert's their guy and all that stuff. Like, Eckler has been their most effective offensive weapon since he's been there. And for him to request a trade, it feels like maybe the wheels could be close to coming apart in Los Angeles before they've even really built the wagon or whatever the phrase may be, because they barely made the playoffs and then blew the lead to the Jags, and their wide receivers, they just restructured both Keenan Allen and Mike Williams to pay them a shitload of money next year, which means that they're not going to play on the team next year. And it just kind of feels like they were going into this year as like, this is probably the last shot. We're probably going to have to extend Herbert. We're probably not going to be able to pay too many guys. And now with Eckler potentially being out of there, like, I just don't really see them as being nearly as big of a threat as I did this time last year.
Yeah. I think that's completely fair. Speaking of teams that aren't threats, boom. They make the transitions today. The Raiders bring in Jimmy Garoppolo after reports that they did inquire about Aaron Rodgers' availability, after reports that they actually asked the Bears about the number one pick, which now belongs to the Carolina Panthers after a mega deal that went down on Friday. They signed Jimmy Garoppolo. They trade away Darren Waller to the Giants for the pick that the Giants got from us for the Kadarius Toney trade. And they signed the aforementioned Jacoby Myers. This is a bizarre team. It's not a good team. And to be clear, we have nothing to fear from the Raiders, but they're just odd. Like, they went out last year, obviously traded their first and a second round pick, immense draft capital for Devontae Adams, made him the highest paid receiver in the league. I mean, the guy's 31. It's not like I think he's 30 this year. He's still great, obviously, but then now they're having to, they let Derek Carr walk. They released Derek Carr, and what's their plan? I mean, they're picking.
What are they doing in that coil?
Picking seventh. You wouldn't think that that's going to be able to get one of the top four quarterbacks in this draft unless they move up. They signed Jimmy Garoppolo, so I guess they don't have a lot of pressure to do that necessarily, but at the same time, they're not going to win anything with Jimmy Garoppolo. I just don't know what they're doing.
And they're in a division with Mahomes and Herbert and even Russ. And so, at least as far as their path towards anything relevant or significant as a franchise, it just seems like there's a shitload of roadblocks. And, McDaniels obviously was in a ton of hot water for everything, for how the team, responded to being up and losing a bunch of games last year. And it just seems like, again, like with the Chargers, that the wheels are kind of falling off before they ever even finished in Vegas also. And I don't know if their plan here is to compete or not. And if you don't know, if you look at the roster and you can't tell if the team is like trying to compete or not, sure. That's bad.
Right.
That's,
it is bad. It is bad. You got to have
an 8-9.
You got to have a plan.
Yeah. Like that's right. A middling team. That's not going to be bad enough to really do anything significant in the draft. They're not going to be good enough to win any playoff games. Like it just feels like the Raiders are stuck and they're probably stuck for a while because they just don't seem like they have leadership. They certainly don't have enough talent to really get them over the hump. I mean, I think we're not going to be talking about this team for a while.
Boy, speaking of teams without plans, we saved the best for last because the Denver Broncos have been the biggest spenders in free agency so far, $217 million so far. And boy, this Mike McGlinchey signing gets funnier and funnier yeah, after each successive tackle signing because mm-hmm. every tackle that's signed after him is getting paid less and is better. He got paid $87.5 million over a four-year deal. Obviously, he is not anywhere near the pass protector that Juwan Taylor is. The Chiefs signed for less money. He's, I don't know, he's probably fairly comparable to Orlando Brown, but, you know.
That's not a compliment to either guy.
It's not a compliment to either guy. And Orlando signed for $20 million less. So, you know, I mean, to play the more premium position, they paid a dedicated right tackle, $87 million. And it's not like he's Mitchell Schwartz. He's fine. He's fine. But like.
Everybody keeps posting that picture of him getting lifted up by a Cowboys, probably Parsons or someone. Yeah. But like literally horizontal in midair because he just, I don't think he's very good.
He's also 28. So he's older than Orlando and he's 4 years older than Juwan Taylor. I mean, the guy's significantly older and worse and more expensive. That was just the start. That was just the opening salvo. They paid guard Ben Powers $51.5 million over 3 years. They paid defensive lineman Zach Allen $47.75 million over 3 years. They signed Jarrett Stidham, former Raider,
QB1,
two years, $10 million, which is an interesting little signing. Running back Samaje Perine, quote unquote Chiefs killer, according to at Broncos Daily or at Daily Broncos, something like that. Go let them know what you think about Samaje Perine being a Chiefs killer, maybe in the one regular season game that nobody cares about. And, you know, ask them what they did in the AFC Championship game this year. See if they can look that up for us. Tight end Chris Manhertz, $6 million. Our old friend cornerback Tremont Smith, who I did not realize was still active and doing things in the league. And then, of course, the aforementioned fullback Michael Burton, who they signed for $1.32 million. This is Broncos fans are going nuts because they're like...
In a good way?
Yeah, because they're like, Walton money. Look at us just blowing out all these contracts. It's like, you guys realize there's a salary.
That's not how it works.
Right? Like, you could pay cash up front, and that certainly gives you more flexibility in navigating the cap. And obviously, the Walton Penner Group, which owns the Broncos now, has shown in this first week of free agency that they're willing to spend. Their orders of magnitude richer than any other owner in the NFL. So it makes sense. But at the same time, this is what you got with your money. Yeah. I mean,
Mike
McGlinchey,
Ben Powers, Zach Allen,
right.
Yeah.
I guess.
And the funny thing is also, you know, two offensive linemen and a running back, and a backup quarterback. How many of those moves show that you have trust in Russell Wilson?
Zero.
Negative. I mean, they're saying basically we have to mold our team around having a bad quarterback. That's what this whole. The whole offseason has been for them so far. And I mean, I guess if I owned them and was stuck with Russ's contract, that's probably what I would do. You know, like it's probably not the bad move, but it's certainly hilarious. And it's certainly indicative of what I think is going to happen with Russ next year, which is I think the guy that we saw last year is the version of Russ that we're going to see until he retires. I don't think he's going to get it back.
Yeah, he's not going to get it back. He does have the benefit of a better coach now. And so, you know, superficially, the results might be better. But I completely agree with the picture that this is painting of what Sean Payton thinks about Russell Wilson, which is that he thinks he sucks. It goes back to, you know, when they injected Terry Bradshaw with old man truth serum. I mean, they didn't have to inject him with anything because old people have zero filters and just will say whatever the fuck comes into their mind. But they asked him, of course, like, you know, they said he, Terry said he doesn't want to go to Arizona because of the quarterback. And they were like, does he want to go to Denver because of Russell Wilson? And he was like, should I say this? Nah, no, but.
And know. Everyone knew he was telling the truth.
I know.
Because exactly. It's obvious.
Yeah, you could just tell on his face. He was like, you could see the wheels turning in Terry Bradshaw's CTE riddled 80 something year old brain, where he was like, well, I probably shouldn't, but I'm just going to go out and say it. No, he doesn't want Russell Wilson. And all of their moves show that they don't think Russell Wilson is the guy. Not only that, but like, have you seen that they're apparently shopping both of their wide receivers?
Yes.
Like, yeah. They're shopping Jerry Jeudy. They're shopping Courtland Sutton. Of course, they're not going to get, they want a first round pick for Jerry Jeudy and they want a second round pick for Courtland Sutton. And neither of those guys have ever shown anything. Like, they're just not good players. But the fact that you are shopping your top two wide receivers, beefing up the run game.
What's the point of having wide receivers, like, if we can't gonna throw?
They're
going to
be running the single wing. They're not going to throw a forward pass. They're going to sign Zeke to play quarterback. He's going to be their center. He's going to be up there doing the trick play. They're just going to lean into the run game. I mean, it's absurd. They clearly have zero faith in Russell Wilson at all, and it's amazing.
Ready for the underdogs, the upsets, and the unbelievable action from DraftKings Sportsbook? The biggest tournament in college basketball is here. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 on college hoops to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all customers can score a no-sweat bet during round one and two of the tournament. Go to the app, opt in, and place a no-sweat bet this weekend. If it doesn't hit, you'll get a bonus back up to $10. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be using this to bet on my Jayhawks. So you guys, if you're trying to win money, that's the way you do it. Bet on the defending champs. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Sign up with code TPPN. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Win or lose, only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code TPPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Well, Taylor, we're 3 days into free agency. There's still
where
a lot of guys.
Where do we go now?
Where do we go now? All right. Okay. Let's get that out of our system here. Players that we're still interested in. We were doing it off the air. We brought it back onto the air. We recorded it. It's done. It's in the record.
The segment is called, in all caps, where do we go now?
No way around it. It was unavoidable. So we've done in the past, like a free agency draft kind of deal. We're not prepared enough this week. We've got a lot going on with the tournament, and I've been traveling, and I'm here in person. We've got a lot going on, so we're just gonna go back and forth. We're gonna have a little dialogue. We each picked five players that are still, as of time of recording, available and that we're interested in. I will start us off. I'm just gonna come out and say it. Odell Beckham Jr.
Now, bring him in.
Listen, here's the deal. I know he's 30. I know he hasn't played in a year. I know that the last time we saw him was in the Super Bowl against the Bengals. He looked great for the Rams down the stretch. And I get that he's had a lot of injuries. I get that he's coming off of a serious injury. I get that he's 30. And I also get that per reports last week, he was looking for $15 to $20 million a year. But first of all, the wide receiver market, as we have seen it so far, dictates that he will not be able to get that kind of money. No one's going to pay him $15 to $20 million a year, regardless of whether that's what he wants. So for him, you know, I mean, I think even at the age of 30, I'm sure in a perfect world, he would love to get 2 years, $40 million guaranteed, whatever, and be able to say, this is probably going to be my last contract, make one more big payday. But look, if he's confident in betting on himself, he could take a one-year deal, and he could prove that he's healthy. He could go ball out, and he could conceivably still get paid next year when the wide receiver market maybe will be a little bit more robust. It can't be worse. And I think the Chiefs were at his workout. You know, he did kind of a pro day a couple of weeks ago that several teams, including the Chiefs, attended. There's been persistent rumors linking the two. I really do think that for Odell's brand, and to really reestablish himself as a player and a force in the league. I mean, he's a guy that was on a Hall of Fame trajectory his first, you know, 4 or 5 years in New York. And I'm not saying that he's going to get into the Hall of Fame based on, you know, 2 years with the Chiefs. But I'm not saying that. I mean, if the old Odell can come back, if anybody can get the old Odell back, it would be the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, him as wide receiver one with Travis Kelce, even if he's like 70% of the prime Odell.
Man, that's still valuable, a damn good wide receiver.
That's a valuable player to have in this offense. And I'm not saying that he is, but I'm saying that I would be very in on Odell. I totally get if you are out, but at this point, he's the best option left in free agency, point blank.
I completely agree with that take. I think that Odell, if you're advising Odell, like, hey, if you want to cement your legacy, make money, win championships, really whatever goals he has in mind, like where is a better place than catching balls from Patrick Mahomes and
right.
being on prime time 5, 6, 7 times a year and going to the playoffs and getting Andy Reid to draw up plays for you? I mean, there is no better place for him to resurrect his career, his image, his productivity than here. And a one-year deal makes the most sense because, like, then he can just use that one-year deal. He's immediately in a contract year. He can immediately kind of go out there and try out all year for his next mega deal, which doesn't have to be with the Chiefs next time. But, like, it certainly makes sense in 2023 for him to come here. I mean, I think that would be a blast. First of all, I would love for the Chiefs to upgrade from fake OBJ to real OBJ. I am sick of people calling Orlando Brown OBJ. I guarantee 100%. You. Most people in Cincinnati are not going to be calling Orlando Brown OBJ. I think that was a one-time deal. I don't think anyone in Baltimore called him OBJ, and I'm sick of it. This is Odell Beckham. OBJ is Odell Beckham. He is not Orlando Brown. So, of course, I had to get that off my soapbox. But I have to pick a player now. I'm going to pick 25-year-old Eagles, former Eagles safety, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Sure.
He is a thumper. He's versatile. He kind of reminds me of like Juan Thornhill's role where he can do a little bit of everything back there. I just really like his upside, and he had a hell of a year this year for the Eagles, and I would just love a talent like that to replace a guy like Juan Thornhill so that the safety group, instead of being – I mean, look, I like Justin Reed enough. Like, he's good and fine. But, like, if he's your best safety – I don't think that's good enough. I don't think that's a good enough back end of the secondary, especially with all these crazy wide receivers and quarterbacks in the AFC. Like, they need a guy that is prepared back there. And I think that would be CJ Gardner-Johnson. So I would be fired up to get him.
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting piece for the Chiefs to add for sure. You know, they like to collect safeties. Safety is one of the positions that the Chiefs like consistently love to add at pretty much every year and will spend money at, even though it's not necessarily a quote unquote premium position. I certainly could see it. I think he probably has the best chance of getting, you know, more of a mega deal than any of the other safeties that made it into this free agency class. So he probably would be a little bit pricey, but I certainly would give him a call and see what he's interested in doing. I mean, at his age too, you know, unlike Odell, who's 30, you know, he could conceivably, you know, if he doesn't like his market this year for whatever reason, you know, maybe sign a 1 year deal. I think we're seeing more players, you know, take these 1 year contracts and just get back into free agency, because rarely are you going to be in a situation where, you know, if you're in a bad market, it's rarely going to be worse with the way that the NFL is constantly growing and the salary cap is constantly going up. I'm interested in a pass rusher, and that's going to be the theme of my next three picks. Spoiler alert. But I'm interested in Yannick Ngakoue, and
I love him.
He's not the player that he used to be. He's played on 5 teams in 4 years, which is crazy. But he's still just 28 years old, and you know, he's a guy that, you know, with a guy like Charles Omenihu and with Chris Jones obviously taking up, you know, commanding double teams and commanding all that attention in the middle of the defensive line, being able to kick outside. I just think Yannick Ngakoue is the kind of player that could really benefit the Chiefs. He's 28, and I don't think, you know, I could be wrong because he's one of the better edge rushers that's still out there in free agency, but I just don't think that he's going to command all that much money. We haven't seen, you know, the market for edge rushers yet. I mean, there's not a whole lot of players like Ngakoue out there, but at the same time, I mean, I think teams probably learned their lesson last year after the Raiders gave all that money to Chandler Jones, after the Bills gave all that money to Von Miller. And, you know, unfortunately for the Raiders, Chandler Jones did finish the season. Unfortunately for the Bills, Von Miller did not. And, you know, I think there's a lesson to be learned there. He's a couple years younger, a little bit healthier. So he'd be my next pick in terms of a guy that I'd like to see come in. What about you?
For me, I'm going to stay in the Eagles secondary.
Oh, sure. Just keep going.
First of all, the Eagles, boy, do they have a lot of free agents, and they were very good.
They brought
last
back
year.
James Bradberry.
They did bring back James Bradberry. So that means that I'm going for the other side of the cornerback room, and that is Darius Slay. And I know Slay is on the smaller side at 6 foot, but he's 32, but that means that he's not going to cost a lot of money. And the Chiefs don't spend a lot of money on cornerbacks. They just don't. And a guy like Slay is still fast, even though at 32, he certainly could fall off at any point, I'm sure. But until he does, I think it almost reminds me of like Bashaud Breeland, where you know, he's a guy that you could see a veteran presence coming in and knowing how to kind of teach younger guys. And boy, if you need someone to teach younger guys, like the Chiefs have a crap load of younger corners that could really benefit from a guy like Darius Slay that's been around the block and knows every defense or every offense that's thrown out there. And I mean, I just think he would be a good influence. I'm probably a little swayed on this because I watched his post game Super Bowl YouTube show that he had.
Yeah.
And I just like the guy a lot. Like, he was really genuine and he was really just effusive about the Chiefs and their approach to the game, and everything he said, I thought was like, man, if he was my player, like I would want him to talk like this, like just very root guy that's easy to root for. So I would love to see Darius Slay at Arrowhead.
I'm gonna bring back former Chief Melvin Ingram.
I love it.
Is 34 years old, and you know, he's not getting any younger. But listen, he just has produced consistently over the last several years. He was with the Steelers, he was with the Chiefs, he was with the Dolphins, and you know, some guys just have it and are able to remain productive even into their 30s as pass rushers. And you know, as a guy that has been a rotational piece, I think the Eagles kind of demonstrated with their pass rushers, I don't think they had anybody quite as old as Melvin Ingram, but you know, I mean, Fletcher Cox is getting up there, and they have players on their defensive line that were older guys. I think the goal, the way that you can make that workable is, you know, if that guy's going to play 300-400 snaps and take on a bigger role for you in the playoffs, that's something that's really valuable. I'm not saying that Melvin Ingram is the same type of player, but the Chiefs did that with Terrell Suggs when they won the Super Bowl in 2019.
Oh, yeah.
They did it with Carlos Dunlap this year.
Yeah.
And you know, brought him in as an older guy to take some rotational pass rushing snaps. And I think if you're going to take the approach of bringing in an older pass rusher, you know, the way to do it is not that Von Bell, or I keep wanting to say Von Bell, the safety from the Bengals, who former Bengals safety, as is Jesse Bates, all their safeties walking out the door this week, which is fine. They got Orlando Brown Jr. So, you know, they're doing great. I think the lesson from the Von Miller signing and Chandler Jones signing is, if you want to sign a pass rusher in his 30s, fine. But like, go sign one of these guys that, you know, go sign one of these guys that wants to chase a ring and is willing to sign for 1 year and $6 million, right? Like, go sign a Carlos Dunlap, go trade for a Terrell Suggs, make a minimal investment. Because, I mean, listen, I'm not saying that Von Miller and Carlos Dunlap were the same player when healthy this year, but ultimately, you know, the Chiefs were playing Carlos Dunlap as a rotational guy. He stayed healthy, and he was a big contributor in the playoffs. And Von Miller was, you know, they wanted him to be an every down guy, and his body couldn't hold up. Chandler Jones fell off a cliff, you know, as an every down guy. I think there are a lot of guys that sort of fit the Melvin Ingram mold, but we have a history, we have a past, and I would like to see him return.
And he played well for the Dolphins. I mean, you know, he's not a guy that you're like, you could squint and see maybe he would be good. Like, he still shows that he's got some good football in him. So I love that move. I would be fired up if the Chiefs got him back. I don't know what his relationship was like with the Chiefs and if him leaving was because, you know, one side or the other didn't want to or whatever, but I would be fired up for that. A guy that I would really like to see the Chiefs sign is Darius Slay, 10. And yes, I just went from Darius Slay to Darius Slayton because I had a good chuckle.
Ba-doom-tsh. Yeah, no.
Right. Because, you know, I was looking through the free agents. I thought Darius Slay would be a good fit, and then it just kept rolling off the tongue. I was like, oh, yeah. Darius Slayton. And clearly the Chiefs need to bring somebody in at wide receiver.
Yeah, they do.
And they need to do something. They cannot go into next year with the current group of Tony and MVS and Sky Moore. Like as good as each of those players individually, like as fun as they are individually, they are not ready to be a full wide receiver room in the NFL. They're not healthy enough, consistently enough. They're not consistent enough. They're just so the Chiefs need to make a splash. And yeah, maybe it's like at 31 overall in the draft or something. But if you bring in a guy like Slayton, although this is not like traditional splash wide receiver signing, he certainly would have the most experience in the NFL and the most success in the NFL of anybody in that room, and is explosive and was able to be explosive with Daniel Jones at quarterback in New York. And I mean, I like his peripherals. I like how he's athletic, and I think he would be a good fit here, as I think a lot of wide receivers would be, because you have the best quarterback of all time throwing you the football. And I think it would be a good fit for Slayton to come here. So would love to see that pairing.
I like it. And, you know, Darius Slayton had a 8.91 relative athletic score coming out of Auburn. He was a fifth round pick by the Giants in 2019. Elite vertical jump and broad jump numbers. Elite 40-yard dash. He ran the 40 at a 4.39. And he's, you know, 6'1" and 190. You know, I mean, he's a good sized guy with a lot of deep speed. And I think that, I don't know. I mean, MVS obviously couldn't do it consistently, but he's kind of a little bit like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, but he's younger. And I have a little bit more confidence that the Chiefs could maybe develop him as a weapon over the middle of the field. I would love to see that. I teased it already. I'm taking Frank Clark. I'm bringing him back to the Chiefs.
Hell yeah.
I read his tweets a little bit differently, and maybe I missed a few of them, but I think there's obviously different ways that you can interpret that string of tweets that he put out this afternoon, whether there might potentially be bad blood between him and the Chiefs or, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of the tweets were very complimentary and very respectful of the Chiefs organization. But I think we saw it a little bit last year with him, you know, mentoring the young pass rushers and the humility that he brought to the team and to his game was good. I think, like, again, we're getting into, he's now 30 years old. I mean, he's getting into the veteran rotational pass rusher phase of his career. Yeah. And as I just talked about with Melvin Ingram, Yannick Ngakoue, the Chiefs need players like that. And I don't know. I don't have any idea what his market is going to be elsewhere. I don't have a good handle on that at all. But I hope that the Chiefs are kind of keeping an open door to Frank in the event that he doesn't find what he's looking for. And if he does, good for him. I certainly will wish him the best. He's a guy that we've talked about many times on this show as having, you know, one of the more surprising and redeeming career arcs ever for a Kansas City Chiefs player. And I certainly won't begrudge him if he finds a team that's willing to pay him more money, but I hope that the Chiefs keep that door open and keep that dialogue going in the event that he decides he's interested in coming back.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it would be a lot of fun. I also think that, you know, with just his love of Andy, calling him like a father figure and all that stuff, like, I just think that for Frank, I mean, the fit just makes too much sense. So if they can come to a number that makes sense for both parties, I think it'll happen. I really think that I said earlier that I wasn't sure on those tweets. I kind of have read over them since I said that. And I do agree that it's not as obvious to me as it was at first that he was pissed about something. I think he's got layers, man. Yes, he really does. I'm going to go with a guy that is gigantic and old. And
old man strength.
He has as much old man strength as maybe anyone in the NFL. And that is 6'8", 307-pound, 36-year-old Calais Campbell. Oh. And Calais Campbell does fit that mold that you were talking about as the veteran defensive end presence that the Chiefs can kind of bring in. And, you know, same type of move that they have been doing. And I just feel like he's had a great pedigree with Arizona, Jacksonville, and Baltimore. He's had success everywhere he's been. He had a great three-year stretch. He's old now, 34, 35, 36 with Baltimore, but still managed 10 sacks in those 3 years and sure. 99 for his career and is a rotational guy, would not be a guy that they would be asking very much of, also would not be asking very much money. I just think that it would be kind of that same veteran defensive end fit that you were talking about with Melvin Ingram. I think that would make a lot of sense.
All right, my final choice, I'm going back to the Fountain of Youth, and I'm picking up former Minnesota Vikings tight end Irv Smith Jr. Now,
I know him. I love
this. This draft class, another one of your dynasty guys, even though we do not require you to start a tight end in our league, which makes his presence
on your
roster very confusing, but he is dynamic. I mean, this guy was the 50th overall pick in the 2019 NFL draft. He's still just 24 years old. I mean, he's going to be 25 this season. And, you know, the knock on him is injuries. He played 16 games his rookie year, 13 games second year, 84 games last, or excuse me, 8 games last year. I was looking at his number, 84, and then I just saw the 8, you know.
Sure.
It is what it is. Yes. 8 games last year, only one start last year. The Vikings traded for TJ Hawkinson midway through the year, but after Irv Smith went on season-ending injured reserve. But, you know, this is a guy who has shown some dynamism. I mean, 9.4 yards per reception in his career for a tight end. In his second year, he was at 12.2 receptions. He had 5 touchdowns on 43 targets. So a guy that has shown some dynamic ability, and he's not just a move tight end. He's 6'2", 240, so he's not a dynamic blocker. But he's a guy that, I mean, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Jordan Reed, you know, the former Washington tight end who, when he got on the field, really flashed and really showed a lot of promise as, and Jordan Reed was a smaller tight end too, who was, if you ever, you know, rostered Jordan Reed on your fantasy team, hilariously injury prone. I mean, sadly, I don't want to make light of a guy getting hurt, but I mean, just, it was
all the time.
It was preposterous how
and
often
and concussions
guy,
most of the time. Yeah, I mean, he just couldn't, right, exactly. couldn't stay on the field. Yeah,
but, you know, Irv Smith is a guy that he's a dynamic athlete. He would be a really interesting piece for them to get on the field with Travis Kelce and Noah Gray. And, you know, if it works out, I mean, take a one-year deal. But if it works out, the guy's 25 years old. I mean, he's a guy that you could bring back and see fitting into your long-term plan. And, you know, Travis Kelce's not getting any younger. I'm not saying that Irv Smith is going to come in and replace Travis Kelce. But, you know, again, when you're taking flyers on guys, the tie always goes to the guy who's 25 years old as opposed to the guy who's 32, right? I mean, there are guys on our lists, Calais Campbell, Melvin Ingram, that are older guys. The reason they're on the list is because there just aren't that many guys at their skill set out there. But if there were ties between, you know, a Calais Campbell type and somebody that does the same thing that Calais Campbell does, that's 26, bank on the guy that has a chance of getting better, not a guy that's about, you know, has one foot in the grave, proverbially speaking, right? And Irv Smith fits that mold for me. I would be really intrigued to see if the Chiefs brought him in. I would be on board with that. That's my last pick. Who you got for me?
Well, before I give you my last pick, I want to say that one of these guys that we've named so far has already gotten a new team. So
that's the
danger you get when you're talking about the free agency in the middle of the free agency.
In the middle of free agency.
But Darius Slay is going back to the Eagles. So I can cross him off my list. They cut him and then brought him back? They said they were going to cut him and everyone ran with it and said that the Eagles were going to cut him. And then they figured it out. And so he is back with the Eagles. So, you know, would have been fun, but I'll take Chauncey Gardner-Johnson over him anyway. So my final pick in our draft that I've already missed one guy is going to be Adam Thielen. And
okay,
I'm not thrilled about Adam Thielen. I am interested in Adam
Thielen. We need to get a wide receiver somewhere.
That's exactly where I'm coming from. I feel like if it's not Odell and if it's not Darius Slayton and if they don't trade for DeAndre Hopkins or, you know, Mike Evans or, I mean, just someone that has some splash, like they still need someone in this room. And I don't feel, even with 31st overall, that they can draft someone that I'm going to feel good about if it's not. I just think they need to bring someone in. And Thielen's the next guy on the list, I think, that would have enough cachet that I would at least be like, all right, I've seen him catch touchdowns in the NFL before. So, like, I feel good about that. And he says he wants to go play for a contender and win a ring and all the stuff that everybody says before they go sign with the Steelers or someone like that. But I feel like Adam Thielen would immediately be the Chiefs wide receiver one, if nothing else changed, like even over Kadarius Toney, over MVS, like he would still be. And the more I'm saying it, like, I don't think that's very fun. I don't think that's a scenario that I want to go into next year, having Adam Thielen as wide receiver one. So, you know, he was the last pick I had here.
We should have flipped the picks around to make them more exciting instead of going out with the Adam Thielen whimper, but you know what? Look, I'll put a positive spin on it. I'll give you a little pop and pizzazz with Adam Thielen. I mean, sure, he may not be great, but he's available. He's a guy. And, you know,
yeah, that's good pop.
He's a
got
guy,
a pulse.
He's a guy who has a pulse, who can play wide receiver. And, you know, the Chiefs do need a body there, and he is a body. It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. Adam Thielen.